Are you going far?
But considering you just set up your camera on top of your computer.
Well, I went last time anyway with Montana. The people are probably tired of hearing my voice.
No, they love you. The people love you. Yeah, I can go first. Yeah, okay. Of course.
How long is yours?
I guess you're going to have to find out.
Okay.
It's 7 pages.
Okay, so it's mine.
Okay. But it'll go quick.
Okay.
Radaby.
Uh-huh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome
to Ghoul Society.
That's my little sister, Sarah.
And that's my big sister, Jamie.
We are grateful to be recording on the unceded, stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples, whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests on this land, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
What's up? I'm back. What's up?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
Just tweaked my back, got my heating pad on.
Shit. I also have my heating pad. Listen, I realized I never don't use my heating pad all the time.
You know that you might get a heating pad rash, right?
No.
Yeah, you can get rash from, like, artificial heat.
What?
Yeah, like, you know those really tiny heaters that people have under their desks?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can get a heat rash, but it, like, is permanent.
What?
And girls who use heating pads on their backs every day, all day, will get it. Do you want me to show you what it looks like? It's kind of scary.
Oh my fucking god. Yeah, show me.
Okay, I have to open my laptop. I'm sad.
I'm sad and I'm scared. Okay? No, it's not okay. It's not. Aw, that's a cute picture of you and Montana.
Oh. Gotta close that, otherwise.
Otherwise I'll know.
Heating pad.
I've never seen a rash on my back. Okay. When I use it for a long time and I don't have a shirt on.
Uh-huh. Like it.
Then my butt. Oh, I've kind of gotten that, but it goes away.
Oh.
But it's not in the same kind of way. It's like, I just get like, my back goes red. I guess I get a little rash, it's never stayed.
Oh, so it gets so bad for some people, they have to use a retinol topical cream.
Wow. Okay, well.
Yeah.
I'll keep an eye out for that.
It's also known as toasted skin syndrome.
So, I don't know why that's so funny.
Toasted skin.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, so it's a 4-day weekend. Yeah. I'm really excited for this 4-day weekend. It's such a sleigh. It's probably a 3-day for most people.
Yeah.
But it's 4-day for me, bitches.
And me.
And my sissy. What else? Well, it's Friday the 13th.
It's Friday the frickin' 13th. And there's two more Friday the 13ths this year.
Yay! I know. But March, did you hear that from apparently? Two Girls, One Ghost?
No.
Oh, you
it's
just...
It's everywhere.
Oh.
One in March, I think, and then...
Oh, next month. November. Yeah. What's the other one?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, happy Friday the 13th for everybody. And tomorrow is Valentine's Day.
Yay!
We like Valentine's Day.
I like Valentine's Day.
Some people hate it.
Yeah, well.
I get it. Yeah. I get it. It's a capitalistic hellhole holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? You get to decide however you want to celebrate it. You can go out with the gals. You can go out with the guys. You can not.
Go out with the theys.
Yep. You can drink wine. You can not.
Yep.
You can eat chocolate. You can use it as an excuse to get yourself a present.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Do whatever feels good. I use it as an excuse to eat a bunch of chocolate-covered strawberries.
Yeah. Not that you really need an excuse to do that. But if it feels good.
Yeah.
Feels better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also at the store, they had, like, they have all those Valentine's chocolate boxes and they're shaped in a heart.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Kraft peanut butter one and it was peanut butter inside chocolate.
Ooh.
Yeah. It looked it was really tempting to buy it, but it was fucking $9. I was like, nope.
That doesn't sound like that much money. Was it small?
Yeah, it was like a heart-shaped.
Oh, I see.
It probably had like, I don't know, 6 to 10 pieces.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, from the grocery store, that is a little cheap. Here's the thing. Love that for you. I hate peanut butter and chocolate. Yeah, I know. But I especially hate Kraft peanut butter and chocolate. If it's like natural peanut butter and dark chocolate and like sea salt.
If it's natural peanut butter, maybe. If it's organically made natural peanut butter that's straight from the ground. Someone ground up the peanuts themselves.
I'm so attacked. That's not how I mean it. Okay, listen, I eat junk and trash all the time. It's not about that. It's the fucking taste is disgusting to me. I don't know why everyone's so obsessed with peanut butter and chocolate.
Because it's so good.
I really wish I liked it. I try it all the time. And I don't like it all the time.
You try it all the time and you hate it that much?
Yeah.
Don't put your hand in the hole of your pants.
Okay, Sarah just made that sound weird, but there's a hole
rip in
on my knee.
She just made it worse.
Yeah.
There's a rip in the knee of her long johns and she just put, you know how you put like, yeah.
Yeah, see, you get it. You
yeah, I do get it, but don't.
In the hole. Okay, fine, I won't. Shit. Anyway, okay, well, I'm gonna just go into the story.
Yeah, you should do that.
Okay. I guess we don't have a lot else to say. What?
Oh, well, I
do. Oh,
say but, it. No, it's okay.
Say it!
Oh, I was just gonna say that it's almost F1 time again.
So. I'm so excited for the F1 girlies.
Preseason testing. So.
Testing? What are they testing?
The cars. Do you not understand how it works?
No.
Okay, so this year they're hybrid, first of all.
Whoa. That is probably controversial.
Yeah, but every year they build a car. Every single year they rebuild their car to try to be the fastest.
Holy
car
shit. Wow.
Ever.
Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah. But this year they're hybrid.
So they'll be slow.
They're slower than last year's.
But everyone is slower. So
yeah,
it's even.
But actually, one of the teams, Aston Martin, is 4 seconds slower than the fastest. And 4 seconds in F1 is like a lifetime.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4.
So
that's too long.
It's a long time.
It's like half a lap.
Well,
a quarter. Do they do laps?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Okay. It's like a quarter of the track, 4 seconds, probably.
Well, yeah. Laps are usually like 1:20.
Okay.
Or a minute.
So my math is not mathing. It's girl mathing.
Yeah. But anyway, so it's just exciting because it's all new and everyone is trying to debate who's going to be the fastest.
Love it.
And so there's a lot of drama happening.
Yeah, I bet. I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
Well, with that news, I'm going to talk about not race cars, but eventually I'm going to talk about a boat.
Another boat.
What the hell? You're not excited?
No. Jamie loves boats.
I don't know what's up with me and boats. I don't
even
get boats.
It's your autism showing.
Fuck. Outed. Fucking outed. Listen, I get seasick, but I just like...
Boats.
Boats. Boats. Boats. Okay, so the story that I'm covering today takes place on the border between Michigan in the United States and Ontario, Canada. Sorry, this is your cue to yawn.
I just had a latte.
Oh, good. Okay. You think you... What?
I think I might have heard.
Oh, you might have heard about those places.
Yeah, I might have heard of them. I don't know. Okay. I've only lived out west. What do I know?
Yeah, what do we know?
Nothing.
So it takes place on a giant lake that often acts like an ocean. The traditional lands and territories of this area are home to the Anishinaabeg peoples, which encompasses the ancestral territories of the Council of Three Fires, the Ojibwe, the Odawa, and the Potawatomi. This area is also used by and home to Michif Pie, which are also known as the Métis people, and the Nihi'uwuk, which are known as the Cree peoples. There are many indigenous groups in this area that traded and shared resources and who have and still foster the land to this day. So you can look on native-land.ca on the map, and they also updated their maps so it kind of looks like constellations. Yes. And it's really, really cool.
Yeah, I saw really that like when last weekend when Montana and I were recording, I was like, this interface looks a little updated.
Yeah, it's awesome. So anyway, this lake, you've probably heard of it. It's called Lake Superior. The Anishinaabemowin name for this lake is Gichigami, which translates to Great Sea, and it really acts like a great sea. So I want to use the traditional name for the lake, so anytime I say Gichigami, you will know that that is Lake Superior.
Mm-hmm.
So Gichigami has a surface area of 82,000 square kilometers, which is approximately the size of South Carolina or Austria.
What?
Yeah, it's fucking huge. Also,
it's that big?
It's huge.
It's
so when I drove through that area and like across the country, we would literally be driving for like, we would see the lake and be like, oh, that's a lake. And then we would be driving for like 8 hours and see a lake, and it would be the same lake.
That's like from here to the interior.
Yeah.
But it's just lake.
Yes. So there's enough water in Gichigami to cover the entire landmass of North and South America, quote unquote, to a depth of 30 centimeters. That's this much.
Splish splash, I was taking a bath.
Annual storms on the lake regularly have waves of over 20 feet tall, and waves of over 30 feet have been recorded throughout history.
Yeah, so listen, me kind of wants to go, how do you pronounce it again, sorry?
Gichigami.
Gichigami. I want to go, like, spend some time there just to see.
On the lake?
Just to, like, see.
Yeah.
Witness and experience the lake.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. So it acts like an ocean, essentially, which is really, really cool. And it's a beautiful place with an incredible ecosystem that has been relied on for sustenance to local peoples for thousands of years. We have data showing the first people came here about 10,000 years ago. And those are the direct descendants of the Anishinaabe people.
My brain can't comprehend.
I know. It's kind of amazing.
That's incredible. How do they know?
They've excavated different areas and have found like
settlement.
Yeah.
Like
layered and layered and layered.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
It's really cool.
That's cool.
So an example of this kind of like stewardship of the land is Anishinaabe women were often water keepers, and they would take care of the well-being of Gichigami.
Oh.
Along the wetlands and the clean waters that, like, surrounded the lake grew wild rice, known as manumen, and this manumen is integral to the culture, livelihood, and identity of the Anishinaabe. So Anishinaabe women would tend, harvest, and process manumen from specific rice beds in which they had the rights to. And these rights were traditionally established through the practice of binding, bunching, and tying stalks together to protect the ripening seeds and that kind of like area. So you would see it all like being taken care of.
Right.
And you'd be like, oh, that's so-and-so's plot. And it was passed down to them through the generations. And like, they're the stewards of this area.
Oh, okay.
Ceremonies and spiritual practices are important to protecting manumen and ensuring its abundance throughout the season. So this is just one example of the strong connection and understanding that local peoples have had with the lake for time immemorial.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we've kind of talked about the lake and its cultural and spiritual importance, we're going to get into the real reason that I've brought you here today. We're going to fast forward many
boats.
Yeah, boats. We're going to fast forward years post-contact, post-settlement, post-wars and colonizations and all the shittiest shit that happened in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Go fucking read a history book. Okay. Yeah.
What year are we starting?
On a summer's day in 1958.
Oh, it's so we're in the 50s.
A giant ship called the SS Edmund Fitzgerald was
launched
into the Kitchigami.
I wanted to cover this story.
Yes, got it.
I wanted to cover this story because.
Yes.
There's a specific date, and it happened.
November 10th.
Yeah. And I was like, next November, I'm going to cover this story.
Shit. Sorry, brother.
Girl, it's only February.
We should have covered it last year because it was
the
50th anniversary of the sinking. Well, I wasn't going to give it away.
Okay, okay, well, we all know. It's Cool Society. We're talking about boats.
So
it went down.
Yeah, it's true. So when this ship was launched, and yet, okay, technically it's not a boat, it's a ship, but whatever. When the ship was launched.
I can't believe that you can even say this ship was on a lake. Like,
dude.
Like, when I think about lake. No, I know. I'm just saying, like, when I think lake, I think of like.
Wait, did I accidentally skip over its maximum length and width and depth? I did. I didn't say it. Sorry. Its maximum length is 563 kilometers.
The lake?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
You just went over that it will cover the Americas.
Yeah. Okay. So sorry. I skipped the sentence. Its max length is 563 kilometers. And its maximum width is 257 kilometers, with a maximum depth of 1,333 feet.
What is down there?
Yeah. Or 222 fathoms.
What the fuck is that? What's a fathom?
You know when you say, like, I can't fathom. A fathom is, like, a depth.
Here, it's okay. An actual unit of measurement. Yeah,
it's a unit of measurement.
That's what that means?
I'm searching define fathom so that a computer can do it for me. Yeah. A unit of length equal to 6 feet. It's used in reference to the depth of water.
Fuck off. I didn't know that was a unit of measurement.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask people how tall. People should use that when they're talking about their height. How tall are you? A fathom.
Bristol just being like, I'm 1 fathom.
Yeah.
Because not many people are 6 feet tall. You have to be at least 6 feet. Oh, yeah, I guess you could say I'm half a fathom.
Yeah. If you're like 3 feet tall.
I'm 3/4 of 1 fathom. That's so silly. Okay. Anyway, so big ass lake. That's why it makes sense why there's a big ass ship on this lake. So when it was launched, it was the largest ship on any of the Great Lakes.
Yeah, because how can a ship fit on a lake?
Yeah, I know.
Even, I just can't.
I know. It's okay. It'll make more sense. I probably won't. Yeah.
Wait, where's the lake again? Like.
It's in Ontario.
It's in what's it's like, now Ontario.
Yeah, okay. Let me show you on
can
the
I
map.
See, yeah, can I see on the map?
It's right there.
Oh, ding, right. Ding, okay, ding. Well.
Cray cray, right? And that's like where Thunder Bay is and yes. Where all the first like HPC company was and all of that kind of shit. It's so wild to me how the Great Lakes, like, okay, so the border between the states and Canada, so-called, is through the lake.
Yes, there's that piece.
Yeah.
Of, there's that little piece.
The island, this one?
Or no? Not the island.
This.
I don't know. There's one.
This is quite riveting content for everyone or listening.
Maybe it's...
This one?
No, I just saw... Oh, actually, no. The city I'm thinking of, I think, is landlocked. Oh. Anyway, I was just thinking about how there's this one really tiny area of the States, but it's landlocked because of how our border is. And so the people who live there, unfortunately, are going to have to now go through proper border. Like, they don't have border agents there because they're just allowed to come and go into Canada to get groceries.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Listen. You're supposed to say look.
Oh, look. Anyway, I was just...
No, wait. Actually, listen, look, though. Borders are fake.
Oh, yeah.
Borders are so fucking fake. They're so fucking stupid. Also, fuck ICE.
Yeah.
Fuck everything happening in the States.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah.
No one is illegal on stolen land.
Exactly.
So anyway...
Anyway, lakes and boats.
Now, this job of this ship was to carry iron ore from the mines along the Minnesota Iron Range to ironworks in Michigan, Ohio, and other ports. Obviously, this is pretty opposite of, like, the sustainable stewardship that was happening on the lake for thousands of years before, but I digress. This is where we are at. So, Captain Peter Pulser was known for playing super loud music on the ship's intercom while passing through St. Clair and Detroit rivers, no matter the day or the night. So he had captained the ship quite a bit.
Bro.
And he would also entertain spectators at the Sioux Locks, which are stationed between Gichigami and Lake Huron, which Lake Huron's traditional name is Gichigami, which translates to Great Cross Waters Sea.
Oh.
Anyways, so what's his name, Captain? He would have it like on the big loudspeakers of the ship, and he would just give like a running commentary about what was happening on the ship to everyone who was like listening and watching in the when he was going through the locks.
Oh.
Because there's like a lock that you know, like in the English canals when you have to like...
Yeah.
You know,
Because the land changes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so because of the size, the fun DJ Captain, and its performance of running resources DJ back and Captain. Forth, many boat watchers loved the Edmund Fitzgerald, and everyone's like, this is such a cool boat. However,
boat watchers.
It wasn't always fun and games for the Fitzgerald. On the day of its launch back in 1958, thousands of spectators arrived in boats and on land to watch the great ship be placed into the lake. There's video footage of this, which I encourage you to go and watch, and we'll have a link for it in the description. But essentially, the ship very quickly slides into the harbor, just like, with a really strong, like, list.
Yeah.
And then it soaks the entire audience standing around the ship.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And smashes into the dock.
Oh, fuck.
So, not really the smoothest operation. And you can see near the end of the video that the ship kind of, like, destroyed the launching pad that it was on, leaving tons of debris in the water and along the shoreline.
Oh.
Amidst all the chaos, a spectator actually suffered a fatal heart attack, probably because it was literally terrifying to see a giant ship splash into the, like, ocean, into the lake, and almost break the dock.
Can I see now?
Yeah.
Or do I have to wait till...
No, I'll show you.
Okay. Watching ships be launched is, like, crazy.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so you can see these are all, like, the boats.
Okay, everybody's watching in their boats.
I've skipped ahead the video, like, halfway through. All the people on the shore, they have this little setup thing. This
Holy
is the boat.
Fuck. Oh my god. Oh my god, I'm scared.
Yeah,
this is why
someone had a heart attack. And people are so close to it.
Oh my god.
And you did the see rope all snap? This?
Did some of the rope snap?
I don't think
so. Oh no, they didn't. Yeah. I mean, well, they were using wood, right?
I think it's like metal beams and wood, maybe.
Ooh.
I don't entirely know. And then there's these guys are like on the boat too.
Yeah,
the boatman. You see she a fucking thick ass boat.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah. There's one more. There's like another view of it. Okay, we'll watch from here. This is from the other side.
Holy. Oh, it smashes into that.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And this boat.
Oh my gosh. Drive away.
I love how no one cares. It's so.
Yeah, everyone's just 1950s. Standing there. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so yeah, that's like where it all
comes. Also, the American flag on that boat, what's happening here?
Well, because this is in Michigan, technically.
Oh,
I know. I kept getting confused too. I was like, wait, what? This is why borders are stupid. Anyway, so that's the launching video. It's quite
creepy.
Riveting. So I would say take a look at that video. Okay. Additionally, during the launch, a champagne bottle was being opened to celebrate the new, like, ship launching. However, it took 3 attempts to break the bottle open, which apparently is a sign considered to be a bad omen by sailors. Yeah.
Because don't they break it on the ship? Or they just...
I don't really know.
I thought they break it on the ship.
Oh, like on the ship?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that's what they do.
Oh, damn. Awkward.
Or maybe they were just opening it, but I thought...
No, you're probably right.
I thought the tradition was that you smash it on the ship.
So you don't even drink it, you just smash it?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe regardless, the ship's life continued on, driving up and down and around the lake for years and years and years, transferring resources between ports. All right.
Lovely.
Now, on November 9th, 1975... The SS Edmund Fitzgerald set out from Superior, Wisconsin at 2:15 p.m. The ship at this time was under the command of Master Captain Ernest M. McSorley, who was 63 years old. The ship was carrying a cargo of ore pellets weighing 26,000 long tons. Do you want to guess how many pounds that is?
What's a long ton?
It's a weight of measurement.
Why can't they just say ton?
A unit of measuring weight.
Okay, wait. How many pounds is what? How many long tons?
26,000 long tons.
26,000. Okay, I'm going to guess in pounds. But I don't know what the conversion is at all. Is it like... Wait, okay, 26,000. So it's probably like 500,000 pounds? A million pounds?
It is. Unfathomable, but it is 248,240,000 pounds of ore. That's too much ore.
Wait.
I know. What? And then the boat is on the water, floating on the water.
Yeah, how does that work?
I don't know.
I don't understand boats. They scare me. You know, we've talked about this before. How big are, like, cruise ships and container ships, and how do they float? I don't get it.
Physics.
Yeah, but, like, you're telling me there's 58 million...
Pounds? Of iron ore.
What?
But yes, I know.
That's like... Wait, how many...
That's like 58 million pounds.
How many me's is that?
Me's?
Me.
Oh.
Like, how many...
How much do you weigh?
Like 280. I'm 180.
I was like, really? Okay, that's like
180.
Okay, for the sake of like ease, I guess I'll just take away 240,000 of it and then just divide 58 in half. So that's like 29 million of you.
Wait, that's like almost the population of, like, Canada.
I know.
That's, like, probably the population of Canada.
Okay, Sarah, what's heavier?
Wait.
58 million pounds of iron ore or 58 million pounds of feathers?
Isn't it the same?
Yeah, I was just trying to trick you.
Don't trick me with math tricks. You know it's my worst subject.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to trick you. Okay, so it's got 24 million Sarahs. Probably.
Wait, I have to Photoshop 20 million.
Yeah, you do. Oh my god.
On this ship.
That's so crazy. And so it's cruising along the lake at a speed of 26 kilometers per hour. And
dang, she's zooming.
Yeah, she's zooming.
She's zooming and she's so heavy. How?
She's so thick. Water. I don't know. So okay. Around 5 p.m., the boat caught up with another freighter under the command of Captain Jesse Burney Cooper. And this freighter was named the Arthur M. Anderson and was heading for Indiana. So we're in November, and the weather at this time was not super unusual, so the captains of the ships were suspecting, like, a small storm to come through the lake around 7 a.m. on the next day, November 10th.
Okay.
And this was told to them by the National Weather Service, the NWS. And so they're like, okay, cool, like, we're prepared for this, it's fine. But the evening before, when the Fitzgerald was at the loading dock, Captain Paquette of a ship named Wilfred Skies was also being loaded at the same dock opposite of the Fitzgerald.
Okay.
And Paquette was talking with Captain McSorley and warning him that actually a major storm was going to directly cross Gichigami.
Oh.
Paquette had decided to take a more protected route and was encouraging McSorley to do the same, but McSorley decided to stick with their regular route. As did Captain, what's the other captain guy's name? Cooper. Uh-oh. So Cooper and McSorley, or at least they, like, maybe started on the more protected route, but then they were like, eh, it's fine. We'll just, like, go on the regular route.
Right.
On the evening of November 9th, the NWS updated their forecast, issuing gale warnings for the entire lake. Fuck. Both the Anderson and the Fitzgerald altered their course, seeking shelter along the Ontario shore. Around 1 a.m., both ships encountered the winter storm that everyone had been talking about. The intense cold wind battering against the windows and spraying the ships with the icy waters of Gichigami. The Fitzgerald reported winds of 52 knots, which is the same as 96 kilometers per hour.
Oh, we know about that.
We do.
We know about that. That's scary. That's scary. That's wind.
Fast. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
blow you off your feet.
Yeah. Like, when the wind gets that bad, I actually think that my windows are going to shatter in my apartment.
I know. That's crazy. And so at this point, the waves were 10 feet high. After 1 a.m., Captain Paquette of Wilfred Skies was listening in on the radio and could overhear the decisions being made by the other two captains battling the storm head on.
Oh,
so Captain Paquette was listening to Captain Cooper and Captain McSorley.
Okay. Oh, shit. He was probably like, I told you guys. I told them.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
I told them.
And so McSorley, much like the other captain who had also driven the Fitzgerald ship, he was just like, he would just zoom up and down and he could go really fast on the ship, like up and down the lake. He would just be like, whatever, let's go, whatever, go, go, go.
Right.
But Paquette had actually overheard McSorley say that he had reduced the ship's speed because of the rough conditions. And Paquette was stunned at this because it was not something that he was known for doing ever.
Right.
So he knew that it was bad. Or it was getting bad.
Yeah.
Over the radio, McSorley stated, quote, we're going to try for some lee from Isle Royale. You're walking away from us anyway. I can't stay with you. End quote. So he's saying that because they're all kind of like going together, like the freighters, right? So he's saying that to Paquette at this time.
Okay.
Now, lee is a term used in seamanship for direction relative to the wind. There's leeward and windward. Leeward is downwind from point of reference, and windward is upwind from a point of reference.
Okay.
Anyway, it doesn't really matter, but I'm just letting you know that's why he says, like, we're going to try for some lee from Isle Royale. So he's trying to say, like, we're just going to go this direction from this island.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, by 2 a.m. on November 10th, the NWS upgraded its warnings from gale to storm, forecasting winds of 65 to 93 kilometers per hour.
Wait.
However, we already know that the winds are at 96 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, wait. They upgraded it?
Yeah.
From gale to storm is an upgrade?
Yeah, I guess so.
I thought it would be the other way around.
I don't know.
I thought gale force winds were like the worst.
Ding. I don't know.
Okay.
This is just what I read.
Okay. Anyway. So it's getting worse.
It's getting worse, essentially.
But it's already bad.
It's already really bad, yeah. Until this point, Fitzgerald was following behind the Anderson boat, but eventually it pulled ahead of the ship by 3 a.m., so within the hour.
Okay.
So now the Fitzgerald is at the front, Anderson is there, and then the boat that Paquette is on is like, they've left Paquette way behind. It's fine.
Right.
Now, the storm center was passing over the ships at this point, and the captains experienced the winds shift and wind speeds temporarily dropping.
Mm-hmm.
However, as the day went on around 2 p.m., so now this is like 12 hours later again, wind speeds picked up again super quickly, and it began to snow.
So they were in the eye of the storm for 12 hours?
I guess so.
That's a big storm. If you think of it, like, in the sky.
Yeah.
That's a big, like...
Eye.
That's huge!
I know. I think it just wasn't moving that much, maybe.
Or it was moving with them.
Maybe,
yeah. And then they caught up with it, and then maybe it switched. Or it, like, slowed down. Or I don't know how clouds work, or I don't know how
anything works. Listen, we're not weather scientists.
No, but that is crazy.
Yeah, so it's super windy. It's snowing. There's, like, no visibility.
Great.
And then by this point, the Anderson ship had lost sight of the Fitzgerald.
Fuck.
And they were about 26 kilometers apart from each other.
Ooh.
Now, about an hour later, shortly after 3:30 p.m., Captain McSorley radioed to Captain Cooper to report that the Fitzgerald was taking on water and had lost two vent covers and a fence railing.
Oh my.
The vessel had developed a list, which means it's actually a lean made, mm-hmm. like, not necessarily by waves, but rather perhaps something wrong with the ship. But essentially, like, if you're lifting, imbalance. You're leaning.
Yeah.
So two of the six bilge pumps were running continuously to discharge shipped water.
Oh,
also, now it would be a good time to mention that there was a crew of 29 men in total on this ship. So it wasn't just the captain, which that includes the captain, but it wasn't just the captain and the ship.
Yeah.
There was other people as well.
Yeah.
So McSorley told Cooper that he was going to slow down so that Cooper could catch up to him in case something went wrong.
Right.
Now, in a broadcast shortly after this, the United States Coast Guard warned all freighters that the Sioux locks had been closed and that they should seek safe anchorage somewhere. So they're like,
They're just like, throw your anchor out?
I guess so. Good luck? Kinda. I don't even know what you do. I think you just ride it out.
I hate those videos of, like, ships.
I love them, but I hate
them. It's so scary.
You know what I hate more is watching... I just saw a video. This guy had a GoPro on, and he was, like, cliff jumping into a super deep, clear lake. I don't like that.
No.
I don't like that. Even when we used to be on the boat and we'd jump, like, in the middle of the lake.
Yeah.
So scary. So scary, because you don't know what's under you. So, after 4 p.m., McSorley called Cooper again to report a radar failure.
Oh, no.
And now he's like, Cooper, can you keep track of us? Because I have no idea where we are. Right. I can't reference anything. I can't see anything.
Right. He's completely lost.
Completely lost. There's no visibility. No. Nothing. However, on the plus side, it did slow down the boat slowed down enough to come within a 16-kilometer range of Cooper's ship, so they could at least see each other. Oh, which you might think, 16 kilometers, that's really far, but I guess it's close enough to see each other. Listen, I don't know. For the next few hours, Cooper did his best to navigate for the Fitzgerald, and McSorley was attempting to get help from any other ships or lighthouses in the Whitefish Bay area. I had read that he had, like, contacted the Coast Guards, again, being like, yo, like, is the, like, radar stuff working at the lighthouse? And they were like, well, the light is on, but, like, no other kind of things are working in it, so good luck kind of thing. And he was like, okay, this is a bad situation.
Yeah.
And for a time, Cooper's efforts were working in keeping the Fitzgerald in relative safety within the bay. Mm-hmm. However, captains on nearby ships could overhear McSorley on the radio stating things like, quote, don't allow nobody on the deck, end quote, and something about the vent that no one could understand. Sometime later, McSorley said, quote, I have a bad list, I have lost both radars, and I'm taking on heavy seas over the deck in one of the worst seas I've ever been in, end quote.
And this is on a lake. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. So by the late afternoon, sustained winds of 93 kilometers per hour were still being recorded by ships and observation
sustained.
Points.
Sustained? What were the gusts, do you think?
Yeah, so the gusts, which I'll get into in a little bit. But so this means that, like, these winds were happening for now, like, 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
So it's just not letting up.
So did they get, like, a puncture or something? Like, how did they start taking on water?
We'll get into the theories a little bit later.
Oh, we don't know? Spooky, ooky. Okay.
So captains were battling intensely against the weather while waves as high as 25 feet were crashing into their ships. Aww. And so, yeah, in some moments, the gusts of winds would reach 139 kilometers per hour. With rogue waves as high as 35 feet.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the scariest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, on a lake. On Kichigami.
Damn.
Maybe Kichigami is like, fuck you for taking all this 58 million pounds of ore.
Yeah, no kidding.
From the earth.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, no.
That's my little thought. So by 7 p.m., now we're in the night. Cooper checked in with McSorley to see how they were doing, and he reported, quote, we are holding our own, end quote. After that call, the Fitzgerald was never heard from again.
Why didn't Cooper catch up with them?
I don't know. Or like, I just don't think they could.
He couldn't ride up beside
20
him?
20 feet waves.
Yeah.
No distress signal was ever received.
Spooky.
And 10 minutes later, Cooper lost the ability to reach the Fitzgerald or detect it on the radar. The SS Edmund Fitzgerald and its crew of 29 men simply vanished.
Where did it go? It went down.
It went down, yeah.
It went down so then he can see it on the radar? Mm-hmm. Is that how radar works? Because radar is it bounces off of something, right?
I think so, yeah. So, Cooper called the U.S. Coast Guards in Sault Ste. Marie, which I've been to Sault Ste. Marie when I was traveling across the country. Mm-hmm. It's a cute, weird little town, but I liked it. Anyway, so he calls them multiple times. Wait a second. U.S. Coast Guards? I don't know why there would be U.S. Coast Guards in Sault Ste. Marie, because that's in Canada.
Maybe they have both?
Maybe, yeah.
Because it's an American ship, right? No, it's
a... This is true.
Right.
It is so an American ship. They might be stationed there.
Yeah, they probably... I don't know
that's
how
a good point.
The lakes work with the stupid borders, but mm-hmm. they probably have both countries on either end.
Yeah.
Depending on...
Where you at.
What ship is... Where the ship is from, maybe.
Yeah.
Something.
That's true. So he's calling them, and then they're like, actually, can you, like, call us back on a different channel? Because we want to keep the emergency channel open. And Cooper's like,
This is a fucking emergency, you dingbat.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy shit.
So that was around like 7:30, 8 p.m. And Cooper wasn't successful until 9 p.m. when his report was finally taken more urgently.
Oh my God.
However, the USCG lacked appropriate search and rescue vessels to respond to the Fitzgerald disaster. They asked Cooper to turn around and look for survivors.
What?
Which is crazy, given the weather, yeah. Even though the storm was kind of letting up. But not like, really.
Sorry, Coast Guard, that's your fucking job. Because they couldn't get out there.
Yeah. So get I guess there, just because they don't have, like, the boats that they had would have been too small for the storm.
They would have capsized.
Yeah. Well, so as the urgency increased, more and more people came to search, but plans were still being foiled by the weather. Around 1 a.m., so that would have been 6 hours later, a helicopter was used. And this was, on November 11th, like the next morning.
Oh, okay. So the winds are obviously
finally letting down. Yeah. So a helicopter was used by the USCG, and eventually the Canadian Coast Guard aircraft joined as well. The search recovered debris, including lifeboats and rafts, but none of the crew were ever found. Between 1816, when the Invincible was lost, which was another ship, which also sank in the same lake, and this sinking in 1975 of the Fitzgerald, the Whitefish Point area where they were, that bay, has actually claimed 240 ships, though nothing of this size before.
What's going on over there?
It's like the Bermuda Triangle of Kichigami. Yeah.
It's a Bermuda Bay of Kichigami.
Yeah. Eventually, the wreck of the Fitzgerald was discovered a year later in 1976, lying in two large pieces at a depth of 530 feet. The bow section was upright in the mud, and the stern was capsized at a 50-degree angle from the bow. I kind of saw, like, a recreation video, and so what one of the, like, theories is, like, the ship was going, the bow went underwater, hit the ground, like, boinging the ship up, and then it snapped.
Mm-hmm. Like the Titanic.
It looked kind of like the Titanic, yeah. In between the two broken sections lay all the iron pellets that were being transferred along, that were being transferred.
500 million pounds.
58 million pounds.
58 million pounds.
Along with ship wreckage, just like on the floor
and
of the lake.
Bodies.
Additionally, divers have found a couple of bodies trapped under the wreckage with their life jackets still on.
Oh my God.
Attempting to help them float to the top. Because That's of the so cold, sad. Low oxygenated waters of Kichigami, these bodies have been preserved. The site is also preserved as a site of historical significance, and therefore no one is allowed to take anything from the wreck, including any bodies that are found.
Wait, like, the bodies are still intact?
Yeah.
Like, today?
That's what it said. Because it's so cold.
But and they're gonna disintegrate over time.
Yeah, it just takes a lot longer. I don't know if the, like, flesh is still there, but, like, the skeletons with the life jackets.
That just reminds me of the Titanic, too.
Under the ship.
How they, like, found, like, clothes and stuff in position of how a body, the body would have laid on the seafloor.
Yeah.
That's so sad. Oh, no.
It is, yeah.
I wonder, they must have just capsized, I guess. They just went down.
Yeah, there are a few different hypotheses on what happened that fateful night. Some reported a group of three rogue waves, often called Three Sisters, and they were seen in the vicinity at the time of the sinking. The Three Sisters phenomena refers to a sequence of three rogue waves that are one-third larger than normal waves. The first wave brings on an abnormally large amount of water onto the deck, then the second wave strikes really quickly before the deck drains away, and then the third just adds to the accumulated water and overloads the deck.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Another theory suggests that the cargo hold flooded due to ineffective hatch closures, which are supposed to prevent waves from entering the cargo hold.
Mm-hmm.
However, video footage of the wreck shows that most of the hatch clamps were actually in perfect condition.
Oh.
So.
Okay. Well, maybe not that then.
Yeah. A third hypothesis suggests that the ship hit a shoal, which is mm-hmm. a raised area of a lake bed, and unknowingly raked a reef while in Whitefish Bay, thus taking on water from below and causing the beginning of the split of the ship as well.
But would they be able to see that in the wreckage? Or, like, can they get in there because it's split with, like...
Yeah, but it's kind of... It would be hard to really know because it's split.
Right.
So it's like, did the split happen when... Did they hit a reef
right.
and then that caused it to be weak and then it split?
Right.
Or, like, did they not hit? Like, it's right. hard to know. If where they hit was right where the ship has split, then right. it's kind of like...
Don't know.
They just don't know. Yeah. There is a shoal around this Whitefish Bay area, and due to the radar malfunction and the not great navigation from external parties, even though, like, Cooper tried his best, but,
yeah.
like, the lighthouse people and whoever.
Yeah.
This is the most likely theory.
Right.
Other theories include structural failure or topside damage from when the fence rail and vents were wrecked by a log or other heavy floating objects. Honestly, the whole string of events kind of set the ship up for a disaster,
mm-hmm.
kind of also from day one.
Yeah.
So I'm not really surprised that it sank during, like, a terrible winter storm.
Yeah.
Now, there is an annual memorial held on November 10th at the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum at Whitefish Point in Michigan. It features the ringing of the ship's recovered 200-pound bronze bell.
Whoa!
And so they ring it 30 times, once for each crew member, and then a final ring for all the Great Lakes mariners.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
sad. That kind of makes me want to cry.
It's really sweet.
Yeah, that is beautiful.
So that is the story of the sinking of the SS Edmund Fitzgerald and the loss of lives of 29 men, most of whom were never found. Now, I have one ghost story. People have claimed to see ghostly apparitions of the ship coming into sight and vanishing without a trace,
mm-hmm.
but this is the main story that I found. And this one is from Reddit user American Idiot TV, which is a great name. And I'm just going to read it to you what was written. So, my uncle used to work on board the Great Lakes freighter, the SS Arthur M. Anderson, and they would haul iron ore and limestone across the Great Lakes. One day, at around 7 p.m. in November 2007, they were crossing Lake Superior on their way to Cleveland, Ohio, when they started receiving distress calls on their radio from an unknown vessel claiming to be the SS Edmund Fitzgerald.
I have full body chills. Oh my God.
Of course,
that'd
as we
so
know,
scary.
The SS Edmund Fitzgerald famously sank in 1975, taking all 29 crewmen with it. Well, he said, at first they all thought it was some kind of distasteful prank mm-hmm. until they checked the radar and found that there were no other ships around for at least 70 nautical miles, and the range on the radios are only 60 nautical miles.
Shit.
He said that the voice they heard from the radio described a heavy storm and high winds and that they were having a hard time holding their own.
Oh,
I just got chills too.
Oh my God, I'm so scared.
My uncle said you could hear true fear in the man's voice from over the radio. But the thing was, there was no storm at all. In fact, the water was calm and the night was clear. At around 8 p.m., my uncle described, the distress calls on the radio came to an abrupt stop, leaving the whole room in a terrifying silence.
Whoa.
And the radio stayed quiet for the rest of the night. Nobody was able to sleep that night, haunted by what they had witnessed. When it comes down to it, there is a sense of irony in this event, being as not only is the ship my uncle was on, the SS Arthur M. Anderson, the sister ship to the Edmund Fitzgerald, but it was also the last ship to make contact with the Fitz in 1975 when she sank. Could my uncle and his shipmates have actually made contact with the ghosts of the crew of the Edmund Fitzgerald, or could there be another explanation to this event?
Okay, also, it's crazy that the other one, the Anderson.
Yeah.
They're still using it in 2007?
Yeah.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's just fun.
That's a long time for a ship, isn't it?
It is a long time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. And so that is some background on Kichigami and the sinking of the infamous SS Edmund Fitzgerald. And it would have been like even more infamous if the Titanic didn't sink and kind of taken the spotlight.
Oh, yeah.
Because like this is kind of a very mysterious case that everyone was like, wait, what?
Also, there's a song about it.
There is a song. Yes. I'm sorry, I did forget.
The song is kind of bopping.
The song is bopping. It made everyone kind of like love, or sorry, not love, but like become obsessed with it.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I said that I wanted to do it next November, because this past November, I was on the podcast's TikTok, and it started getting flooded with videos of people telling the story. And then like and I was like, whoa,
yeah it's kind of crazy. Yep, the song is by Gordon Lightfoot. It's a super bop. I won't play it just because I don't want to get in trouble, but you can find it, it's everywhere. Wow. Yeah, that's my story. Thank you everybody for listening, and we hope that you have a really lovely weekend wherever you are. Happy Sunday. And if you are gonna get on a ship, just make sure that there's no storms coming.
Yeah
You can find each episode's description. Wait a second, is that what I say? You can find
each episode's
resources in the description section underneath each episode, where you can also find trigger warnings for the episode as well. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, critiques, you can email us at
ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Instagram at
ghoulsocietypod.
And you can follow us on TikTok at
ghoul.societypod.
Amazing. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
And we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Sarah has exited the chat.
Was D-Day today?
Yeah, baby. Oh, yeah, baby. 4-day weekend. What's up? It's funny. I don't know. I just think it's funny.
I need content.
I need a continent.